One season, seven games at the most away from coming to an end. We'll take you to Minute Maid Park previewing game one of the World Series. The Pelicans may be without Zion, but they still have plenty of horses for the season opener with the Toronto Raptors. And whether it was the burning barn, the interception game, whatever it may be, the earthquake game, LSU Auburn brings back great memories. We'll talk about that and much, much more. We got a busy day. So sit back, buckle up, let's roll. Today, Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019.
Brady in the gun, receiver in motion, shotgun snap, drops back, rewinds up, packs his own, throws a pass, end zone, over the center, catch, in the back of the end zone, grabbed by Dorsett, heavily covered, touchdown New England, 26-yard touchdown pass by Tom Brady, who dropped that baby in with a great over-the-shoulder catch, heavily defended in the end zone. Third and goal at the one. Brady under center. I formation gets the snap. Hands off to Michelle. Gets the block from the tight end. Tomlinson touchdown for a third time tonight. Sony Michelle touchdown New England. And the lead is 32-0 over the Jets.
Yeah, it's hard to think about, you know, winning when you're losing so many times. But I heard so many people talking, starting from our GM, Jeff Luna, and he was always saying, we're going to be a winning team, we're going to be a World Series champion, that I start believing in everything he said.
These guys are fired up to be here. We played a lot of unbelievable games this year. We've come a long way, so I think they're excited, like I said, excited to be here and ready to play.
I mean, it's the World Series. That's right. Davey Martinez, manager of the Nationals. They're excited. Jose Altuve believed it, and they have achieved it. And the New England Patriots shut out the New York Jets in a snoozer of a Monday nighter, 33-0. So we've got game one of the World Series. We've got game one of the NBA season. Seven games maximum left in baseball. We got 82 games to go in NBA basketball. It's a great, great time of the year. Great to be with you. Thanks for joining us on this. I haven't said this in a while, but it's a Chamber of Commerce Tuesday. What a beautiful day it is. CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Yours truly, Studio 1A. Busy day planned with you and yours. It's the opener for the Pelicans, and they will be without Zion Williamson as they take on the defending champion Toronto Raptors, who will drop a banner, receive their championship rings, and then take on the Pelicans. J.J. Redick with his thoughts about the start of yet another new season.
You always look forward to the regular season. You know, the start of it is like opening presents on Christmas morning. It really is. It's that sort of feeling you had when you were 7 or 8 years old. There's an excitement. There's definitely an excitement about our team and about our group internally and what we think we can do this year.
But we begin today with the Fall Classic, World Series game number one, Minute Maid Park, between the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals. And if you love starting pitching, this is the series for you. Chandler Rome has been kind enough to join us from the Houston Chronicle throughout these playoffs with the World Series that you can listen to right here on 103.7 The Game. And he joins us now from Minute Maid Park. And Chandler, look, the Astros have had a couple of days off since winning the ALCS. The Nationals, the more well-rested team with 6 days off since they won the NLCS. Does that make any difference whatsoever in a game one?
I'm not sure. I think if you talk to Justin Verlander probably has the most experience with this. So if you'll remember, when he was on the 2012 Detroit Tigers, they swept the Yankees in the ALCS and had a very long layoff for the World mm-hmm. Series against the Giants. And they got swept, the Tigers did. And Justin Verlander to this day claims that the long layoff affected the Tigers. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case with the Nationals here some 7 years later, but neither team seems to think it'll be much of a factor. It obviously allowed the Nationals to line up their pitching exactly how they wanted. The Astros couldn't have probably lined up any better, even given that they had to go to six games with the Yankees. They had to get a cold one tonight. But I think maybe where you'll see it the most would probably be in the hitters. The Nationals hitters haven't faced live pitching in 7 days. They did sim games and they did some live BPs, but you can't mimic live pitching, and you certainly can't mimic Gerrit Cole. You can't mimic, you know, the guys the Astros will run out there. So I'd imagine if there is one place that you could see a long layoff have some effect, it would probably be on the Nationals offense.
So you got Scherzer versus Cole tonight, Strasburg versus Verlander in Game 2, Greinke versus Corbin in Game 3. I saw where that group combined for 29 All-Star games, 5 Cy Youngs with a 6th coming very, very soon, 5 ERA titles. Strasburg and Cole were both number one overall picks. Verlander went 2nd overall. Greinke went 6th. And Scherzer went 11th. And that's all in one series for a championship title. What else could you ask for if you're a pitching enthusiast, right?
Yeah, it's funny. So, I mean, the entire sport kind of this whole year we've seen a shift toward the bullpen. There's been openers everywhere. You saw in the first two series the Astros played that it was all bullpen games. It was matchups. It was things like that. But this is as old school as it gets. At least these first three games will probably be as old school as it gets, barring some sort of unforeseen ineffectiveness or injury or anything. The first three games, all the starting pitchers are going to pitch into the sixth and seventh inning. This is not going to be a three inning and done start from anybody, assuming they're not ineffective. So this is the more traditional baseball. This is what a lot of people have been kind of clamoring for all year. A lot of people did not enjoy that game 6 of the ALCS took 4.5 hours because there were 14 pitchers used. I don't think that we'll have that problem in this series. Maybe if it gets to a game 4 with the Astros, we may have that problem. But this is as traditional, as conventional, as whatever you want to call it. This is probably the greatest collection of starting pitchers the World Series has seen in a very long time.
No question. And given the fact that both teams have struggled offensively, look, during the regular season, as you well know, the Astros led the AL in OPS, ranked 3rd in runs scored. The Nationals during the regular season ranked 2nd in OPS in the NL, 2nd in runs scored. But in the ALCS, the Astros, wow, I know a small sample size, but they struggled against a pitching staff that frankly wasn't all that strong. Now they're going up against the Nationals with Scherzer and Strasburg, et cetera. What do you think about the Astros offensively in this one?
So I think it kind of depends on how you want to view it. Yes, the Astros are facing really good pitching, and they faced really good pitching in the first two rounds. But they were touted as the best lineup in baseball. And usually if you're the best lineup in baseball, you should have no problem handling elite pitching. And I'm not expecting the Astros to replicate what they did in the regular season. But the drop-off has been drastic. And if you look at the 2017 World Series champions, they had a playoff drop-off to an offensive production, but it was nowhere near as drastic as this. The Astros have like a 6.45 OPS throughout the playoffs. I think 22 of their 41 runs have come off of the home run, and they're striking out almost 10 times a game. That's just not the Astros. During the season, they struck out fewer than any team in baseball. They put the ball in play. This is a pass-the-baton lineup, and they're really reliant now on the home run, and they're really reliant on being aggressive on the base pass. You're going to see them take an extra 90 feet a ton, and you're going to see them do a lot of different things because that's what they have to do to create runs. Because I think 11 games in, they're pretty cognizant that they're struggling to a point where they're not going to string 4, 5, and 6 hits together in an inning, especially not off the national starters. So their offense has kind of been reliant on, you know, hunt a mistake and make sure you hit it out of the ballpark, because that's really the only way the Astros have scored this postseason.
He is Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. By virtue of their incredible regular season record, the Astros have home field advantage in this World Series. They were a Major League best 60-21 at home during the regular season, 5-1 in the playoffs at Minute Maid Park. What is it about that park that fits the Astros so well?
I mean, it's a good home field advantage. They close the roof. It gets stupid loud in there. The Astros have a lot of right. The Astros have a lot of right-handed pull hitters that use the Crawford boxes very well. And I'm not saying they're cheap home runs, but you play in the ballpark that's designed for you. And
yeah,
the Astros have a lot of right-handed power hitters that can put the ball in the Crawford boxes that can use that short forks to their advantage. And they've just always played well there. And this is not just a new thing this year. Under AJ Hinch, they've really played well since 2015 at home. And this is—it's no secret that they do well there. I don't know if it's they're sleeping in their own bed, they like their own clubhouse, everything like that. They just are more comfortable and familiar at home.
It just seems to me the Astros are the better team. They were 14 games better than the National against a comparable schedule in terms of opponent's average winning percentage, quality run differential. Astros came out 12 games ahead. But I guess sometimes the better team doesn't always win in this thing. So how do you see this series going? And what are your biggest concerns coming into it from the Astros' perspective?
I mean, I'd have told you that the Astros were a 10 times better team than the Rays, and the Rays were within a couple swings there of sending the Astros home early. So this is playoff baseball, and anything can happen. I mean, I'd probably honestly be most concerned about the Astros' offense, because through 11 games, they haven't shown that they can hit elite. They haven't shown that they can hit this elite pitching, and this is. It may favor them this go around that they're going to see the same pitcher the second and third time through the order, just because the Nationals are going to keep their starters in so long. That may favor the Astros because they're really good at adjusting after a second and third time through the order. So maybe that favors them. That's something that they obviously didn't have against the Rays and the Yankees, who used a ton of relievers and matched up. So it was like the Astros were seeing a new pitcher every time they came up to the plate. So maybe that helps this time, but it's not easy to hit Max Scherzer. It's not easy to hit Steven Strasburg, and it's not easy to hit Patrick Corbin. So what I would be most concerned about if I was an Astros fan is the offense and is whether they can hit the National starters. And I think you know with the Astros starting rotation, you don't need a ton of run support behind them. They're able to pitch very well in tight games. And I don't think the Astros or their starting pitchers are asking for 7 or 8 runs. They're asking for maybe 3 or 4, and that may be all the Astros can give them. But it's going to be a difficult go of it for the Astros offense, I think, this series.
Your deadlines may not be that rush, because these games might go pretty quickly with the pitching staff that both clubs have to face.
I mean, how about game five of the ALCS? That was a 2-hour and 30-minute game, because after Justin Verlander got rocked in the first inning, it was zeros all around. James Paxton was good. Justin Verlander threw 6 unbelievable innings after the first inning. And that was a 2.5-hour game. I'll sign up for that every day of the week.
I'm with you. Well, Chandler, I greatly appreciate it. We'll lean on you again another time, but thanks for the time. Today, World Series game number 1, Scherzer versus Cole, Minute Maid Park. First pitch a little bit after 7 o'clock tonight. Thank you. Enjoy the World Series. That place ought to go nuts tonight.
Yeah, it should. Thanks, Jordy.
All right, buddy. You take care. So one season is 7 games away maximum from coming to an end. The marathon known as the NBA begins tonight. Pelicans at the Raptors. Lakers and the Clippers that share the same building. NBA Talk, season opener, next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
And we welcome you back. The NBA begins its 74th season tonight. It ends on April 15th and will conclude in June of 2020. Tonight, a doubleheader. The New Orleans Pelicans will open up against the defending champion or reigning champion, whatever you want to call them, the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors will drop a banner. They'll get their championship rings. It'll be a big celebration. And then they'll conclude opening night in the Staples Center with the neighbors, the Lakers and the Clippers. Preston Ellis is an NBA writer for Bleacher Report and for At the Bird Writes. He's kind enough to join us. Preston, thank you for the time. And the journey begins, unfortunately, for the Pelicans without Zion for a little while. Tell me if there's a silver lining to this dark cloud with him missing, they say, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I know he is the exciting draw for most casual NBA fans. And we are going to get a great dose of him. The good news is, Jordy, we've already seen what he can do on the NBA professional level, and that's dominate people. So we just ask everybody to be patient for anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. We're hoping that his timetable can be accelerated earlier than 6 weeks. We're very much hoping to see him in the Smoothie King Center the day before Thanksgiving against the Los Angeles Lakers. We can see if we can make that happen. But in the meantime, Jordy, there's plenty of great storylines, plenty of great players. There's plenty to look forward to. And if you guys don't think you're going to see a competitive team tonight, you're wrong.
I'm with you. Can the Pels, without Zion, do similarly to what the Saints have done without Drew Brees?
Absolutely. I wrote for Bleacher Report an article yesterday on most improved candidates, and the Pelicans actually have two. Lonzo Ball is poised for a breakout season. He's got all the weapons around him. He's got a cunning defense, a cunning backcourt defender right alongside him. But the guy that everybody needs to keep a watchful eye on is Brandon Ingram. This is a guy towards the latter half of last season. His last 8 to 15 games specifically shot over 40% from three-point range, averaged over 27 points per game in his final six games, a guy that just turned supernova. This is a guy who's going to become a breakout star in the 6 weeks that Zion is not here, because while Zion is not here, that opens up a lot of shots for a guy like Brandon Ingram, and it moves him into an uncomfortable position, which is the four position facing the basket, which is probably not where he wants to be down in the post, but the Pelicans don't play that way. They spread the floor. He'll still get his touches at the perimeter. He'll still get his touches at the elbow, and he'll be able to operate from there. He is going to be very, very successful for this unit, and while we've got a lot of great players to look forward to, we're going to get to Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I'm sure, later. Drew Holiday is poised for yet another ascendance into the next tier of superstar league. In the meantime, I want you to focus on Brandon Ingram, because you're going to see a special player tonight.
Oh, I like it. Preston Ellis, and I agree with you totally. It looked like to me during preseason, Derek Favors was going, you know what, I'm a veteran. I don't care about these games, but I'll be ready when it counts, because I know they're counting on him to anchor the paint, because he did that extremely well when he was with the Utah Jazz. This is a big off-season pickup. I just think he's ready to flip that switch. What do you say?
Yeah, we think he was slowed by a hamstring injury throughout the preseason. They saw Jahlil Okafor get the start in their final preseason game. This is a guy, when healthy, is going to dominate opposing offenses, and they're particularly going to need him tonight, because he's going to be facing off a lot of his minutes against Marc Gasol, a very cunning, low-post facilitator, scorer, just a guy who's a very heady playmaker and defender. They're going to need Derek Favors at his best to play him. And then you've also got Serge Ibaka out there, who's a different kind of five. He can get out to the perimeter. He can knock down those three-point shots. He's a little bit more athletic than Marc Gasol. So they're going to need a lot from Derek Favors tonight. But the good news is, Jordy, that Jahlil Okafor has looked tremendous. He looks to be in the best shape he's ever been on. His fundamentals, his footwork continue to improve. He's finding a way to get his shot against any opponent. So whether you have Favors or Okafor on the floor, I think you're in good hands.
Preston Ellis at the Bird Writes and for Bleacher Report on the NBA joining us. It's a deep bench, but is Nickeil Alexander-Walker possibly, based on what we've seen so far, could he be one of those steals of the draft?
Jory, I'm going to ask you this question the other way around. What haven't we seen from Nickeil Alexander-Walker so far? From summer league to preseason game, he only gets better. Yeah. He only gets more confident. There's no kind of situation or circumstance that we have seen him struggle in so far. We just haven't seen that from a player, except for his final summer league game where he was coming off a back-to-back. I think he had played five games in something like seven nights. That was the one instance we've ever seen him struggle. So the better way to pose this question is, why should we expect anything less from him? He's been great. He he can play every level offensively. Defensively, he's got great size. He can body up against positions 1 through 3. But the thing that has everybody salivating is his playmaking. He already knows how to work a pick and roll at an elite level. He's a great ball mover. He can use both hands. He can get to the paint. He can finish with both hands. He's already exhibiting elite level step backs. He's got a floater. He's got all kinds of tools in his tool shed, so to speak, that is going to make him able to score against anybody and defend against everybody. Of course, we're expecting him to struggle. We know that's going to happen at some point. But tonight, I think it's more than okay to be optimistic. I think you should be optimistic.
Do the Pelicans in Zion's absence, do they go small? Do they go 3 guards in Ball, Holiday, and Redick with Ingram and Favors, or do they stick Melly in there and bring Redick off the bench?
Jordy, I think you're going to see a lot of everything tonight. The Pelicans are going to experiment, and this is the best time to do it while Zion is out, because I'm sure, as you well may know, 14 of their first 18 games are against playoff teams from 2018 to 2019. So it's going to be difficult. They're going to struggle, and that's why you're going to see them tinker with this lineup to get the best possible combination of players on the floor. I think you're going to see a lot of J.J. Redick, a lot of Josh Hart, a lot of Etuan Moore at the three, because they've just got so many great backcourt players, and they need to make decisions on these guys, because some of these guys are impending free agents. Guys like Josh Hart have his option coming. They need to see if Nickeil Alexander-Walker can compete against professional-level players. They have to make a decision on Frank Jackson. And in the front court, Jordy, they're kind of small. They've got Nicolo Melli, who's going to give you probably a lot of minutes at the four and the five. And then you've got Kenrich Williams in addition to Brandon Ingram. So, yeah, you are going to see a lot of three-guard lineups. But with that being said, I really like Kenrich Williams. I really like what he's brought to this team. He can facilitate the three or the four next to Brandon Ingram. I think that's going to be a great combination, the two of those guys. And Kenrich just really flows well. He and Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Frank Jackson have an excellent understanding of where they're going to be, how to operate the offense. It's pure symmetry when the three of them are on the floor. So I think you are going to see at least 10 to 15 minutes of Kenrich tonight.
You got me fired up, man. We got to do this more often. We're going to have to talk about this. I got to get you on every week because you're too good and your enthusiasm is just contagious. I love it. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the start of the marathon, my friend. Thank you. And, oh, to your point, at Toronto, then Dallas, at Houston, Golden State at home, Denver at home, and that's your October slate. Wow, that's tough. Thank you, Preston. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right, you're the best. We appreciate that greatly. All right. So we had the World Series Game 1. We've got the opener of the NBA with the Pelicans at the Raptors. And, oh, by the way, Saturday at 2:30, we got a big football game. We'll head out to the plains of Auburn next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Oh, a great rivalry is renewed this Saturday. National television, you can watch it on television. You can listen to it here on 103.7 The Game. The Auburn Tigers come into town for a very important, pivotal SEC matchup on CBS. If you didn't know, it's been a long time since Auburn has won in Death Valley. The year was 1999. Tommy Tuberville was in his first season at Auburn. Jerry DiNardo was in his final season in Baton Rouge before being replaced by a guy named Nick Saban. Gus Malzahn was coaching in Arkansas that year at Shiloh Christian High School. We bring in the man that covers Auburn and does it so well for The Athletic, Justin Ferguson. Justin, it's been a long time. And first off, welcome. We're thrilled to have you on the show. Been a long time since Auburn's won here. Gus wasn't making his $6.3 million like he is now back then at Shiloh Christian High School. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on. And, yeah, it's been a really, really long time. I mean, not only was Gus Malzahn, you know, still a high school coach, a humble high school coach in Arkansas, Auburn's starting quarterback they're bringing in on Saturday wasn't even born yet. So, I mean, that shows you just how long it's been since Auburn's pulled one off in Baton Rouge.
I mean, everybody's getting up in arms over here about Bo Nix saying, look, we already played in a great environment to start the season off. I'm not worried about it. What's the kid supposed to say? Oh, I'm scared to death to go into Tiger Stadium? Oh, my God. What kind of confidence does that bring out to the rest of his teammates? Of course he's going to say that, right?
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, to be honest, there was a quote going around yesterday about what Nix had said about Baton Rouge, and you know, it was made up. I mean, Auburn didn't let us talk to Bo Nix until today. But Bo Nix did say something today about playing in Baton Rouge. He says, you know, it's a loud environment. It's a tough environment to play in. You know, his dad told horror stories of being down there. You know, he had the safety in the 94 game. On top of that, he said, you know, I've been in a tough environment at Florida. You know, and he feels like he's kind of had his trial by fire. Now, Tiger Stadium, bigger, could be even louder. But they feel a little bit more confident about going into it because when you get to go through the swamp, you feel better about, you know, going into Death Valley. It's going to be a tougher matchup, but he's not going to, you know, be really, really rattled by the noise as he was in Gainesville. But, yeah, Auburn's really putting a high priority right now on getting ready for the noise.
Justin Ferguson for The Athletic joining us. Number 9, Auburn visiting Tiger Stadium to take on number 2 ranked LSU. How good is this Auburn defense?
I mean, it has the chance to be the best that Auburn's had in a very, very long time. And I think right now they have done a great job of really limiting a lot of teams. I mean, they're going to have a defense that keeps them in pretty much every game this season. It all starts with the defensive line. Derrick Brown is playing like an All-American this season. Marlon Davidson, you know, SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week for the third time this season, is right there with him. I mean, Auburn hasn't had a defensive line this deep and this talented in a very, very long time. Their linebackers are playing really well, very gap sound, not missing a lot of tackles. Secondary is going to really, really have their hands full against that LSU passing attack, of course, but they're doing a good job of tackling in space and preventing the big play. Very interested to see that matchup on Saturday and just, you know, how LSU will try to attack and how Auburn will try to defend it. But, yeah, for Auburn's defense, it all starts up front with Brown and Davidson. With those guys playing the way they are, really, really interested to see how much they're going to be able to get after Joe Burrow. And Burrow's putting up, you know, really insane numbers no matter if he's getting pressured or not. But if Auburn's going to have any chance to win this game, you got to think they're going to have to put them behind the chains a little bit by getting after Burrow. That's got to be the key to this one.
Auburn third in the SEC with 20 sacks. Do they just do it with their front four? Or does Kevin Steele, I mean, does he bring in exotic blitz packages? What's been their way of going about things so far?
Yeah, most of it is they rush with four. But they've got a few linebackers and a couple of safeties that they like to use every now and then. So I would say Auburn usually mostly goes after four with Brown and Davidson. Big Cat Bryant coming off the edge, and Tyrone Truesdale is the other guy. Those guys have all been doing a really good job of getting after the quarterback this season. But every now and then you'll see Auburn blitz a little bit. It'll be interesting if they step up the blitz in a little bit more. Kind of a pick-your-poison thing when you face a talented you know, offense like what LSU's got with Joe Burrow. Like, if you blitz them, do you want to give them room to, you know, operate and throw it downfield? Or if you sit back on them and don't bring that extra pressure, do you give them more time to, you know, kind of pick you apart on defense? So very interested to see what Steele does. They've got a couple of young linebackers. Owen Papo, who'll be number 10, former 5-star, is a guy they'll send on blitzes a good bit on Saturday, I would imagine. But, yeah, it's mostly with four. But I would imagine Kevin Steele has been, you know, racking his brain all week trying to figure out just how finding the perfect formula to getting pressure on Burrow, because they can't let him sit back there with a clean pocket. He'll pick you apart.
Justin Ferguson of The Athletic covers Auburn football, joining us. When I think of Auburn, when they're good, man, they run the football. They're still running it well, albeit losing your best running back. Who's carrying the ball now, and Is Gus, who's back calling the plays, is he still doing all that exotic, tricky stuff like he used to?
Yeah, I mean, with Bowie Whitlow down for the next few weeks, Auburn's had to go to a committee at running back. And the key guys to watch out for is senior running back Cam Martin, sophomore running back Sean Shivers, and then freshman running back DJ Williams. All kind of do different things, different styles of running backs. There's a speed back, there's kind of a shiftier back, and there's kind of more of the, you know, every down kind of role in Williams. They're going to rotate as much as possible. Last week against Arkansas, each of those guys pretty much got around the same amount of carries. So that is what you're probably going to see on Saturday against LSU. And, yeah, I mean, Malzahn back calling plays. They haven't had to rely on trickery as much in the past. It'll be interesting to see if he has to bust some of that out to try to get some points on the board in a tough place like LSU. But they've done a really, really good job this season of, I think, when they're on their game, executing the base game plan, which for Auburn is we're, like I said, running the football, but also taking some shots downfield and hitting the big play through the air. Auburn's been a much better team at getting explosive plays this season than they were last season, and I think a lot of that comes down to Malzahn putting in some new schemes and some new, you know, some new twists and new tricks to try to get his guys open downfield. And Nix has done a good job when he has time of getting the ball to him.
He's good at that, no question. How much has Bo Nix, the freshman quarterback, grown through the year? I thought against Florida maybe he tried to do a little bit too much. Maybe that was the coaching staff's fault. I don't know. But it looks like now run the football, let your defense play the game the right way. Don't try and win it yourself. How much has this young guy grown from the start to where he is now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because I think what you've seen with Nix is you've seen him have to kind of go through that bad experience at Florida and come out on the other side saying, you know what, you got to make the smart play better than trying to go for broke too often. And he had three picks against Florida. It was kind of a lot of freshman mistakes rolled into one. Last week against Arkansas, yeah, it was Arkansas. I thought he did a really good job of bouncing back and being a much more confident passer. You know, get that running game going next to you, knowing that that's probably going to be your bread and butter. But, you know, really, really focusing on, don't be afraid, to throw the ball away or to take the sack instead of trying to force it in there too much. You've seen a lot of confidence from him. Outside of the Florida game, he's done a really good job with his decision-making. He avoids sacks. He avoids, throwing interceptions for the most part. But that Florida game kind of was a little wake-up call that against quality opponents like the ones you're going to get against LSU and Georgia and Alabama down the stretch, you got to be a much smarter quarterback. And I think we saw some of that evolution last week against Arkansas, where he made a ton of really good decisions throwing the ball and, looked like a more confident guy.
Seth Williams looks like his go-to guy, isn't he?
Absolutely. Man, Auburn hasn't really had a guy like Seth Williams in a long time. I think, you know, he is a true number one. He's a guy that Auburn likes to go downfield with a lot. He's kind of the stretch the field kind of player, but he's not the speedster. Just a really good in one-on-one coverage. They've done a better job of hitting him over the middle, getting him on some intermediate balls, some back shoulder throws. They like to feed him the ball in a variety of ways, and they've got a quarterback they feel like is confident enough to get him in those spots. And one of the keys this weekend, I think, is not only how they feed Williams, but Anthony Schwartz. They found a way to get both of those guys on the field very often. If you don't know about Schwartz, probably the fastest player in college football. He's, you know, a track star. He once had the world record in the 100 meters for his age group. He touched the ball a lot against Arkansas last week, and that was a high priority for them. If they can get both of those guys feeding them against that LSU defense, they're going to be keys to winning this game. If Auburn's got any chance, it's going to be because those two guys have a big day.
Justin Ferguson, The Athletic, covering Auburn. Look, if you ever studied the history of this series, this is a game where the kicking game always, always plays a pivotal role, whether it's fake field goals, missed field goals, jumping over the line of scrimmage to try and block a field goal and get, I mean, it's been crazy. Game-winning field goals. LSU not so confident. LSU fans not so confident in LSU's field goal kicker now. The punting game is fine. Talk to me about Auburn's specialty teams.
Yeah. This is a game where I think that Auburn needs to take advantage of some special teams in order to have a chance of winning, for sure. I think Anders Carlson is their kicker. the younger brother of Daniel Carlson. You may remember him. He had several good seasons at Auburn. Anders is not as efficient as his brother, but he's still one of the better kickers in the SEC. Very confident, especially from 50 and in. He's got good long range ability. Auburn's got a punter, Australian punter, something that LSU fans are very familiar with, the Aussie punters. Auburn got one of their own finally, and they've done a better job covering kicks this season with him. And the punt return, they've got a playmaker in Christian Tudd, who feels like he's just been really close to breaking a big one several times this season. See if he can do that in Baton Rouge would be huge. If Auburn can find a way to get LSU to punt, that'd be the big question mark there. I think Auburn special teams is probably going to be in a little bit of a better spot heading in. They've played some very clean games these last few weeks. Feels like if this game is going to come to where Auburn has a chance to win it, might need some special teams magic from Auburn. And I think, field goals in the return game will be something I'll have to keep a really close eye on.
You mentioned if we would remember Daniel Carlson. I just remember 2016, he kicked six field goals. LSU was 18th ranked in the country. You guys beat us 18-13 at Jordan-Hare, and Les Miles was fired the next day because he couldn't manage the clock. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. One of the wildest games I think I'll ever cover, period, is that the ending to that one. And, Carlson, the six kicks from him to win the game, it was really, really bizarre. That's the thing about the series, though, and it makes it really interesting for Saturday. It seems like every game there's something weird or wild that happens into it. And for Auburn's sake, they better hope it's happening on their side, because they know this LSU team is just playing just red hot football right now.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite games. And there was a point in time where this was, I don't know what it meant. I mean, it's never going to be the Iron Bowl to Auburn, but at one point in time, LSU-Auburn was the rivalry. It really was. Now, that's been supplanted by Alabama, because LSU hadn't beaten Alabama in forever and a day. But in my mind, Auburn's always one of those scary games that you just can't overlook. You can never take it for granted. They got too much talent on the field. So we'll see. You making the trip over?
Yeah, I'll be down there. I'm heading down on Friday. Looking for always love being down in Baton Rouge. A few times I've been, and really excited to witness another game in Tiger Stadium. It's probably my favorite environment in the country for sure.
That's awesome. That is awesome. All right. Well, Justin Ferguson from The Athletic, you're as good as I was told you would be, if not better, and I greatly appreciate it, my friend. So we'll see you soon. And I guess they call this the Tiger Bowl, but I don't know. That really hadn't caught on yet, but we'll see. It'll be a great environment. Enjoy your time down here in Baton Rouge.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, buddy. You're the best. I appreciate it. Justin Ferguson, covering Auburn for The Athletic. Now, look, it's a big game. So when it's a big game, we come out with all guns loaded, and we want to give you the opportunity to, to get in the house, right? To get in the house, because tickets are at a premium, and we've got the opportunity for you to come to Death Valley this Saturday. All you have to do is text EARTHQUAKE, E-A-R, THQUAKE, EARTHQUAKE, to 68683. That's EARTHQUAKE to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets for this Saturday's Auburn LSU showdown in Death Valley, courtesy of 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Simple. EARTHQUAKE, 68683. We'll be back to wrap up our number one next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We welcome you back. We've got something else for you as well. Swamp and Roll, KDCG-TV, presents this Wednesday the original Swamp and Roll music TV show taped live at Black Gold Casino in Doosan at 7 p.m. This week's featured band is Boogie Express, brought to you by LafayetteTravel.com. Every other Wednesday evening, it's a free show. You can be on television Watch the Purdue show on KDCG-TV Thursday evening at 6 p.m. or online at kdcg.com. The original Swamp and Roll show Thursday evening at 6 on KDCG-TV. Find out more, including schedules, at kdcg.com. When you mention Doosan, that's ShopRite Tobacco Plus. It's my favorite one out of the 60 that they've got. They're all great, but this one is just unbelievable. Everything you need for your travels, for your snacks, for your beverages, they've got it all. Cleanest restrooms you'll ever find, and everything on the shelves, it'll blow you away. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you really can't shop right at all. Back to the World Series tonight. What a matchup. My goodness gracious. It just doesn't get any better. Max Scherzer versus Gerrit Cole, and Scherzer talked about going against the guy that's been virtually unhittable for 2 months in game one of the Fall Classic.
I mean, I've been in the situation, faced really good pitchers here in the National League over the years. You know, Kershaw, DeGrom, those guys. You just know you got to come out there and you're going to be throwing up zeros, and you know, you got to try to match the intensity from your opponent. And Cole's had a terrific year, so obviously it's going to be one heck of a challenge.
Here's Gerrit Cole talking about his opponent, who's been red hot, the Washington Nationals.
I think they're incredibly talented. I think they've had their backs up against the wall early in the year, and it just kind of goes to show you the character of the players that they have. Their catching core is as strong as ever. Their outfield play is excellent, and on the mound they're nasty.
They're nasty. Alex Bregman, a veteran, he's been to a World Series and won it. Talked about the message he would give to his rookie, Yordan Alvarez.
Just tell him to relax. Trust that he's the rookie of the year. He's one of the best hitters in the game of baseball. So just relax, play his game. We all believe in him. Every time he goes up to hit, we think he's going to homer just like in the regular season. And I think he's going to have a huge World Series for us.
They certainly hope he does. Batting cleanup. The Astros weren't hitting the ball very well against the Yankees. Now they're going up against some of the best pitching in baseball. And Bregman talked about going up against Scherzer, followed by Strasburg.
They have elite stuff. They pound the zone, and then they evacuate the zone. And then they pound the zone some more, and then evacuate the zone. So you got to choose which one is a good pitch to hit. They really are really good at their craft, and they're tough to barrel up.
Tough to barrel up. So, A.J. Hinch, tell us, what are the keys to beating Washington?
If you want to do well against the Nats, you got to beat their starters and then make them make decisions as the game goes on. If you sit back and kind of wait for the bullpen or wait for them to make a decision, you'll look at Strasburg and Scherzer throwing 120, 130 pitches, and you'll be too deep in the game to make up a difference. Those guys getting, 21, 24, 27 outs is a real possibility for them, and that makes it tough either way.
So game one of the World Series tonight, you can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game. It's game one of the NBA season for the Pelicans as they travel to Toronto to take on the world champion Toronto Raptors. And Lonzo Ball summed it up when he talked about starting the season without his go-to guy, Zion Williamson.
We definitely want to know, but there's nothing we can do. We got to just hold the fort down until you get back.
What do you think it does for the fan base, too, the excitement that came with Zion?
I mean, he's still on the team. It's not he's missing the whole season. He's going to be out a couple of games, but he'll be back strong.
He'll be back a couple of games. We'll see. If he can make it back late November, we shall see. But the marathon begins. Coming up, hour number two of the program, we always started off with hot topics, and we'll talk NFL talk. Mike Nabors of Cox Sports Television. Is Drew Brees really thinking about playing this Sunday? I don't think he is. I think he'll be the backup quarterback. I don't think he's going to start. We'll ask Mike Nabors, who always gets the final word with Drew. And then some predictions on the NBA season ahead with Henry Hayes. It's all coming your way. Hour number two of the program right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back. Beautiful day. We'll be back for hour number two after this.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
And away we go on this Tuesday, the 22nd day of October. I tell you what, if you're a sports fan, what a night to get all the work done. Get the kids settled in. We got game one of the World Series between the Astros and the Nationals starting at 7 o'clock. You can listen to the ballgame right here on 103.7 The Game. You can flip on the TV to the Pelicans on TNT and watch the Pels at the Raptors for game one of 82 regular season games. What a night, what a night, what a night. And there's word out there the Saints are still looking for a pass catcher. Tyler Eifert has been on the radar for quite a while. We'll see what happens. The Bengals say they are not trading A.J. Green, but the Saints are definitely in the market for a pass catcher. We shall see. We do it every day at this time of day. We take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, if you don't mind.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
All right, CD, what a night we got, right? Oh, my God, the weather's great. The Astros are on, starting things up. The Pels are getting rolling. Yay, at least we got Monday Night Football out of the way. What a snoozer that was. The Jets just can't. They're already beaten before they get onto the field when they play the Patriots. It's just awful.
I'd have to agree with you wholeheartedly, but then again, it feels like most of the Monday Night Football games have been a relative snooze fest. I just have not necessarily been over the moon about it.
Let me ask you this. I'm serious. I think Sunday Night Football has taken over. I think Sunday Night Football is better than Monday Night Football. And before, it used to be Monday Night when they had Cosell and Dandy Don and all that. But now, I think Sunday Night gets the better games.
And I'd have to agree, it definitely has become, the Sunday Night Football games have been a lot more entertaining top to bottom. I've just enjoyed it a whole lot more. I mean, Monday Night Football, just the overall, like, feel of it, I'm just not into. Obviously, it's you different. Got the halftime show is you. Just meh. But, I mean, the only reason why I honestly watched any of the Patriots-Jets game last night was for the Star Wars trailer last night.
I missed it. I didn't see it. Was it is it good enough for me to go actually see the movie? I got to go see the movie.
You got to go see the movie, Jordy. It's pretty darn good. It just looks absolutely fantastic. They went all out with it. 59 days now. 59 days away from the movie coming out and the final movie of the saga. I'm definitely intrigued by it.
Me too. Bring my daughters to that one. They like, especially my 14-year-old, she likes Star Wars. So we'll go check it out. Yes, indeed. And we'll snuggle in the candy so we don't have to buy it at the movie concession stand. But I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that's the way this is going to need to go. But, Jordy, we're talking about the New England Patriots. The only other undefeated team is manned by a former Patriots QB in Jimmy G. The San Francisco 49ers looking good and got a little bit better today with the trade for Emmanuel Sanders to the 49ers. And, of course, the Saints are looking for a pass catcher. But who do they wind up getting now that he's kind of off the table?
I don't know. I'd say, what do you want for A.J. Green? I mean, why not? Why not? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. We'll see. I don't know. They mentioned Tyler Eifert as a possibility. They got to get somebody. I mean, this is all in this year. I think the fact that they won these five games without Drew Brees, I think Sean Payton says, we got a hell of a defense. We got a heck of a kicking game. We get our quarterback back. We just got to find him another weapon. Teddy Ginn drives me crazy. He does. I mean, yeah, he made the long catch, but he dropped one in the end zone. I can't count on him. I can't depend upon Ted Ginn Jr. I just can't. Got to find somebody to take some of the pressure off of Michael Thomas.
Somebody has to, Jordy, because it just is extremely tough, especially if Jared Cook is out for a little bit longer than maybe some of us had hoped. I honestly think he's going to be back before you know it, but you're interested to see who's going to be there for the Saints as the trade deadline approaches. That being said, we got to flip things over, Jordy, to the NBA opening night tonight, and the Pelicans getting that prime time, and I'm sure maybe TNT's not exactly the happiest in the world with the fact that it's no longer the Zion show, but I think they're still looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. And let's add the fact that it is also ring night for the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, that's half of the reason there. But I still think the Pels are going to be okay. Look, they open up, they've got this one on TNT. They've got the home opener Friday on ESPN. Nobody expects an injury. It's the Zion factor for sure. In fact, three of the first five games the Pels play are on national television. So, unfortunately, but look, he'll be back. Is he going to be back sometime in November? Some people think. Is it going to be early December? I don't know. They will take their time. All I wish for the Pels is they can do without Zion what the Saints have done without Drew Brees. And if they can do that and keep winning games, and I think they've got a team built for it. I think they got a veteran club with a lot of good bench players. They may surprise some people. They might.
They've got to really kind of surprise some people after everything that happened with Zion Williamson. Now you're just waiting to see when he's going to come back. And this kind of news broke not long after we wrapped up the show here yesterday. So I got to throw the question your way. With this injury, does it more have to do with the fact that Zion's weight is an issue in your mind? Or is this kind of just how things go sometimes?
I don't know. That's a tough one. It may not. I don't know. He's just a freakish athlete. Yes, he's about 285, but it's mainly muscle. It's not fat. He's not carrying excess weight from a fat perspective. He's just built. So keep him out of the weight room a little bit, and he's going to have to watch what he eats. Of course, they'll have that all laid out for him and scripted out for him. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think it's a Greg Oden type of situation in any way, shape, or form. Fingers are crossed. He's just a great athlete. I just want to see him play. The league wants to see him play. The world wants to see him play.
I think that's everybody, Jordy. Hopefully it isn't a Greg Oden type issue. I think we're all hoping on that one, Jordy. But last one before we wrap up here, let me throw this your way, because this has kind of been an ongoing storyline people have kind of kept an eye on, especially the degenerate gamblers. Somebody back in June put $50 on Joe Burrow to win. And at the time, those odds were 200-1 for him to win the Heisman Trophy. And according to Brody Miller of The Athletic, they're offering him $4,000 to buy out his Heisman bet at this point in time. If it were you, Jordy, and you had an opportunity to win $10,000 off this bet, and somebody's offering you $4,000 to buy you out, you taking it?
I'll wait till after the Auburn game and see what happens then. I'm holding true. I'm not backing out of this thing. I think he's going to win the darn thing. I think he's going to show up and take care of Auburn. I think he's going to show up and take care of Alabama, and that's going to be his Heisman moment. And then he's going to win a whole lot more than that. Gamble. Roll the dice, and let's go with it. Go with it.
I love it.
Stay on show. I mean, yeah, yes, indeed. I mean, hopefully there won't be a full moon in Tiger Stadium on Saturday. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. We'll be back. Saints Talk, Mike Nabors next. Welcome back as the New Orleans Saints will continue their journey this Sunday. This time they're at home in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome taking on the red-hot Arizona Cardinals, who are 3-3-1 overall but winners of three straight. And, of course, the Saints have won five in a row. But the big topic, and we're talking now with the man who gets to talk to him more than anybody, is Drew Brees going to actually return and play this weekend against the Cardinals? Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television, gets the last word with Drew Brees after every game, home and away. Kind enough to join us yet again. So can we let the cat out the bag? Do we know anything? Mike, give us the scoop. How are you?
I'm good. My voice is better this week, too. Sorry about last week. But, you know, we know this. We know Drew's going to practice this week. Drew told me after the game in Chicago that he's going to do everything he normally would do in anticipation of starting the game. But I still maintain, from the people that I talk to, from the sense that I get from Drew, from, frankly, the smart thing to do, I would be surprised if he plays this week. I think, why do you play this week? You're 5-0 without you. You know, not that they didn't need you, but wait two extra weeks. You get this week and the bye week. You come back against the Falcons. You feel fresh down, you know, you feel great down the stretch. And Brees told me in Chicago, too, I asked him, you know, the silver lining here is you probably never felt this good at this point in the season ever. And he's like, yeah, I haven't been hit at all. So there's that, too. So he's going to feel good. So my gut feeling says he won't start on Sunday, but we'll you know, wait till after the bye week.
How about we dress him out, put the helmet on, he plays the backup to Teddy Bridgewater, and now you let Taysom Hill have more involvement offensively that maybe the last five games he hasn't.
Yeah, the Fox report during the game maintained that that could be a possibility, and I asked Drew about it, and he didn't refute that at all. He indicated that could be a possibility as well. That may be a good way to go. You know, I know Drew is just, you know, he's going crazy right now wanting to play football. So, you know, that could be a possibility. I don't see him starting on Sunday. I don't.
I agree. I agree with you 1,000%. It makes no sense to do so when you consider all the factors. What has he told you about his ability to throw the football? You know, we saw him with the Nerf, and now he's throwing the real – can he – what are his limitations, if anything?
It's still a process in terms of range of motion, but he says his pain has decreased significantly. So you get the feeling from him that he can throw the football fine. It's just getting out there and playing football. That's why he wants to practice this week, because he's been throwing and throwing and throwing. Let's get out there and actually practice and get acclimated to playing the game again. And I think, you know, maybe he'll see where he is at the end of the week after he's practiced, and maybe he'll be way ahead. That's one thing about Brees is he's very adamant about being ahead of schedule. He wanted to beat whatever the deadline was, and he's going to beat it. Is he going to beat it this week, or is he going to beat it after the bye week? But I think the pain is not there nearly as much as it was. It's just getting to play football again and doing something besides throwing.
You know, the simplest of things, but I've got to believe one of the most painful things out there is just the under center quarterback snap, and that ball comes up so hard and so quick. Yeah. You know, that's got to play a factor in this thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, he's got to get used to all the nuances. It's almost like, you know, when you're injured and, you know, you lose, you're not used to moving your leg, and I'm used to moving your knee. You got to retrain your body. You know, you got to get your body right again. And he's got to get, even though it's a little part of your body, your thumb, that's a major part of, you know, what he does for a living. So, yeah, whether it's the snap, whether it's, you know, he's not going to take any hits in practice, but he's going to move around more than just throwing the football. A lot of nuances that he is, you know, so accustomed to doing that he could crawl out of bed and do for years. He's got to get used to doing it again, because this is uncharted territory for him. To miss any time during a season hasn't happened in well over a decade, and, you know, it's something he's had to get used to. But I think that's why he wanted to practice this week again, just so he could see where he is in terms of all these nuances.
Mike Nabors of Cox Sports Television, kind enough to join us. Arizona Cardinals at the Saints. Then there's a bye week, and then we go down the stretch run. A lot of players say that when they get hurt and they are observing things, that they learn more about the game. They get a better appreciation of it. They see some of the things maybe that they could take to help the team get better. Has Drew learned anything? I mean, he's seen everything, but has he learned anything in kind of the role of a observer slash kind of a part-time coach?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to ask him that. I haven't thought about that. I'll tell you one thing he has learned, though, is that this football team is really good. And he's also learned this football team is well-rounded. Yeah, I mean, think about how many years we said if the Saints could just get a defense. This is post-Super Bowl years, obviously. The 3 straight 7-9 years. Can they get a defense? Can they get Drew Brees some help? They're not going to have this window forever. He's seen how great this defense has played, and he's watched this offense even last week without Kamara, without Jared Cook, still getting it done. I mean, to me, that Sean Payton play call with the Zach Lyon option to Taysom Hill, I mean, to me, people can give Bridgewater a lot of credit, and he deserves some of it, but I think Sean Payton should get the lion's share of the credit for making this offense center around Teddy Bridgewater, and then not only moving around the Breeze injury, but moving around losing Kamara, then losing Jared Cook. You know, Sean Payton's arguably done his best coaching since he's arrived in New Orleans this season.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I agree wholeheartedly on that thing. Boy, I'm not hearing any talks about Mark Ingram anymore. Latavius Murray had himself a ball game.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing to me, Jordy, over the past 3 years, it seems like the Saints have hit on almost everything in the draft and in free agency. Now, sometimes you get one, you don't get the other. The Saints have really had the best of both worlds. And this year, you look at Eric McCoy, the job he's done at center. I mean, you thought in the offseason, boy, it's one thing to lose Mark Ingram, but it's another to lose Max Unger, the centerpiece of that offensive line that's so good. This offensive line may be the best the Saints have ever had, Jordy. And Eric McCoy hasn't given up a sack all year. He hasn't given up a quarterback hit. He's the only center in the NFL to be in the top five in pass blocking and run blocking. And oh, by the way, he was basically the first round pick, and he wasn't a first round pick. He came in the second round. So, you know, it seems like everything the Saints have done, whether it's free agency, getting Latavius Murray, or drafting, whether it's giving up two for Marcus Davenport, who is contributing mightily, or Eric McCoy in the second round. I mean, it's amazing the run they're on in terms of both facets of the draft and free agency.
Mike Neighbors, Cox Sports Television. Man, if they just recover an onside kick, and I couldn't believe Michael Thomas, I mean, the best hands in the game, didn't get it. I think there was a lack of focus there. But, man, you have to leave your players in, and Eli Apple gets hurt late. Did you hear any extent to how he was afterwards?
Well, if you follow his mom's Twitter feed, she says her boy is going to be fine. It looked really bad at first. You never know with these knees. I mean, sometimes you can walk off the field in your own power, as you know, and you can tear an ACL. I mean, that's just, they're so unpredictable. But it seems like from what I'm hearing, it's not a tear. It's not anything severe, but he might miss 2 or 3 weeks. So the bye week comes at a good time for Eli Apple and potentially Drew Brees. So it was scary at first. You know what? Marshawn Lattimore gets the lion's share of the credit, and he deserves it. But Eli Apple may be the most underrated Saint in terms of what he has done. The fact that they picked him up, we go back to personnel again. You have the draft, you have free agency, and now you have guys you've traded for like Eli Apple. You got to give the Saints front office a lot of credit. You got to give Eli Apple a lot of credit, and they're lucky that it wasn't worse, because you look at last season, you know, when they went to the playoffs, they lose to Shelton Rankins, who was having a career year. You can't afford to lose an Eli Apple, because as you know, Jordy, for so many years, the Saints' Achilles heel under Sean Payton was the secondary. You know, when they made the Super Bowl run, they had the Jabari Greer, they had the Tracy Porter. They need the Marshawn Lattimore and the Eli Apple to make their run, too.
No question. Arizona comes to town. As I mentioned, they've won 3 in a row. It looks like the Kingsbury and Kyler Murray thing is starting to come into play a little bit. But Saints at home in the dome with that defense, what concerns have you about this one, if anything?
Well, you know, Kyler Murray's a wild card. You know, he's a rookie, and I think, you know, in the past you've seen, remember when, RG3 came into the league, the Saints had a lot of problems with him, but this is a whole new defense the Saints have now.
Yes.
My thing about this game, it kind of screams trap game, because, you know, you look at the schedule, even 3 weeks ago you thought, boy, if the Saints could just win 2 out of 3 maybe when they play the Bucs, and then they go on the road and they play a Jacksonville team that's pretty good, and then they go on the road and they play Chicago. Well, they've won all 3. I mean, they've won 5 in a row. You hope they don't go home overconfident. But what I like about this team, and you mentioned Michael Thomas, when they gave up those garbage points late to the Chicago Bears, Cam Jordan told me afterwards, you know, we should feel good about ourselves, but we have a bad taste in our mouth with the points that we've given up late. So you like hearing that from your best players, even though they've won five in a row and they still aren't satisfied. So this screams trap game, but I would be surprised if they had that mindset, because they know they could potentially go into the bye week six in a row and get their quarterback back afterwards if he doesn't play this week.
Mike, thank you for your time, buddy. Safe travels back to New Orleans. You've been all over the globe, but, man, rest the voice, and we look forward to talking to you each and every week, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, one more thing I want to plug, if I can. I started this new series with the New Orleans Saints called Errands. We run errands with Saints legends, and our pilot episode is with Jule Horns. So check out my Twitter feed, at Mike Nabors, N-A-B-O-R-S, or go to the New Orleans Saints website, Errands with Jule Horn. You'll get to know Jule Horn like you never have. We have future episodes with Lance Moore, Roman Harper, awesome. John Stinchcomb, a lot of good stuff ahead. So check out Errands with the Saints.
Good for you. Good for you. I will absolutely look for that, and we will certainly let people know about it. Thank you, Michael.
Anytime, Jordan. See you.
All right, buddy. There you go. Oh, by the way, Arizona's three wins in a row came against the 1-6 Atlanta Falcons, the 0-6 Cincinnati Bengals, and the 2-5 New York Giants. Teams combined 3-11. Not worried. Saints are not slipping up on this one. We'll be back. NBA talk. Yes, indeed. The marathon begins, and so do we next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, the marathon known as the NBA begins its 74th season tonight with a doubleheader, the Pelicans at Toronto, and sharing the Staples Center, it'll be LeBron and AD against Kawhi and company, Paul George and the Clippers. This regular season ends April 15th. The playoffs begin April the 18th, and the NBA Finals are in June of 2020. So that means we got to come up with some ideas and some thoughts on how this season's going to go. Nobody better to talk to the NBA with than my good friend, our NBA analyst, Mr. Henry Hayes. Let the fun begin, Henry. What a great double hit. Well, tempered a little bit, but a nice double dip tonight.
It's an awesome way to start the season, Jordy, in which almost 40% of the players changed uniforms from last year. That's unbelievable when you think about, you always have free agent movement trades, but this year, this offseason was our busiest ever. So, you know, a lot of new faces, a lot of chemistry issues, a lot of questions, and frankly, this is fun for the casual fan, Jordy, because for the first time in a long time, I've been doing this for 25 years, and I can tell you, I think this year is the most wide open we've had it. I knew I was doing this segment with you, and it's taken me a few days, honestly, to sit down and really think about what my best guess is for who comes out of both conferences. And like I said, that has not happened in a long time. So it should be interesting and tons of storylines for this year. That's a good question. I think you
could
argue
that both ways. Or are you one of those that likes a dynasty?
Yeah, you know, look, I think there was a little Warriors fatigue. I think that, you know, they had endearing superstars like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. But, you know, I think when they added Kevin Durant, I think everyone in the league kind of had to swallow hard and grit their teeth and go, well, it's within the rules, but it's not fun. So, you know, I think that it's good. I think it's good that the Raptors weren't last year, right, a new face. And I think it's good that you have really, I could argue six or seven, maybe even eight, Jordy, teams that with the right bounce of the ball, they could hoist Larry O'Brien in June. So that's a good thing. You don't want two or three teams in the league from jump being the only ones that could claim that trophy. So, in fact, I think that's a little bit of the issue college football is having right now. But I think the NBA is healthy, and I think that, like I said, there's seven or eight franchises that say, hey, we could put our name on it, things that should.
I agree. Henry Hayes, kind enough to join us. The NBA season gets underway tonight. There's five new coaches in the league. Great to see Monty Williams back in a head coaching spot with the Phoenix Suns. John Beilein trying to make the jump from college to the NBA. He's coaching the Cleveland, I got to go back to calling them the Cavaliers. And Frank Vogel has his hands full with the Lakers. So with that all being said, with all the free agent movement out there, what's the one team that you really, really want to see and see if it all comes together and works?
Well, there's a lot, Jordy, but I can tell you one that I think is super interesting and it also has the most upside to me, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. Obviously, in these parts, most of your listeners are familiar with Ben Simmons. That does the year at LSU, and he's entering his third year into the NBA. But, Jordy, they get an unlikely big veteran add in Al Horford. Horford was the glue guy in Boston, really played well, and surprised a lot of folks when he opted out of a deal. A lot of folks thought he'd be back in Boston, but he decided to go to Philadelphia. And so now, and the reason they have intrigue, Jordy, is Brett Brown's going to really have to do some coaching to try to figure out how do you play Simmons, Embiid, and Horford together. You could do some high-low post deals, but it could also get messy. They lose J.J. Redick. They lose, the closer that they had in that lineup. But Tobias Harris resigns, and that team defensively, Jordy, could be. I think they could put out five guys that are the best in the league defensively. So, I've actually got the Sixers coming out of the East. A little bit of a risk, but like I said, they have so much upside in terms of what they added. So that's the team I want to see. Can they make it all work? And then, of course, look, the Lakers are the other one. If you have two of the top six players in the world, you kind of take your chances and you say, you know what, we're probably in every game. So those are a couple of mine.
I got to see how – I'm a guard guy. So I got to see how Houston handles Harden and Westbrook, two guys that always have the ball in their hands. Chris Paul was kind of a, okay, you can have it. I'll go in the corner. I don't think Westbrook is that guy. Westbrook is, give me the damn ball. Get out of my way. I want to see how these two guys work. If they work it right, they ain't no telling how many points the Houston Rockets can score. But that's the team I'm kind of curious to see if they can make it work or if it's going to implode rather quickly. So we shall see. All right, let's go over some things. Who's going to be the surprise team of the year in your book?
Yeah, so, for the surprise team, Jordy, actually, this may surprise you a little bit, but I've got the Pelicans surprising. And I say that because, look, we know you're not going to see Zion for a couple months. Now, most of the national basketball media, I think a lot of the casual fans will say, well, cute little story in New Orleans, and, maybe we'll see Zion in February. And I disagree with that. I think if you take a look at the way David Griffin built this club, you got guys like Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, who really have a lot to prove and are playing for their contracts. And I'm talking about the big ones. Then you have what I think is one of the most underrated leaders in professional sports, not just the NBA, and Drew Holiday, matched with great signings like Derek Favors and J.J. Redick. The draft picks they've made have looked like early on they're going to be pretty good. They're deep. And look, of course you'd like to have Zion from the jump, but he'll be back, and I think he'll help them. Don't sleep on the New Orleans Pelicans, which I think a lot of people are going to do now that the show pony, is going to be out for 2 months. So the Pelicans, I think, are going to be my surprise team.
We haven't discussed this, but I am in total agreement with you. Look, they've got as deep a bench as any team there is in the NBA. A lot of these other teams have great star power, but after that, boy, they spent all their money there, and they don't have much left in the cookie jar. Pelicans do. And I believe that Zion will be back. I think he's going to miss about 18, 19 games. He'll miss all of October. He'll miss all of November. I won't rule out Sunday, December 1st against Oklahoma City in the Smoothie King Center as his return. I think he's going to do the work. I think he's a freakish athlete, and I think he's kind of like a Drew Brees. He'll be ahead of schedule. I don't want him to rush it, but I'm with you. I like how this team has been built, and when he does come back, maybe some of that pressure will be off of him, and this may be a silver lining to a dark cloud. But I'm with you on that with the Pelicans as being the surprise team. Who's going to be the disappointment this year? Because there's always one or two.
Yeah, Jordy, and I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here. Might shock some of your listeners. I think this year's disappointment is the Golden State Warriors. Look, you lose, you know, arguably the best player in the world in Kevin Durant. You lose one of the best on-ball perimeter defenders in the league in Klay Thompson. You also lose one of the best team defenders in the league in Andre Iguodala, regardless of how old he is. All those guys are gone. And look, up front right now, you got guys like Kevon Looney and Willie Cauley-Stein, who they're both already hurt. So some people have said, well, this is when Steph Curry goes bananas and shoots 45 times a game, which he might. I just don't think that that is going to equate to winning basketball. On top of the fact that, Jordy, you walk the sidelines, you can attest to this. NBA clubs, look, when the Chicago Bulls were thumping people with Rodman and Pippen and Phil Jackson and Jordan, the year Tim Floyd got there and all those guys left, guess who took the brunt of every other team in the league's ire? It was the Chicago Bulls, because they had been thumping people butt good for years.
Yeah.
I think the Warriors are going to feel some of that this year. And look, the West is absolutely insane. I mean, you're talking about an 8 seed. Let's say the Pelicans were to be around the 8 seed. You're going to have to win 44, 45 games to sneak into the playoffs in the West. So I just think that, I think by virtue of what they lost and what they have coming back, you know, Draymond Green, good player, Steph Curry, one of the best. But other than that, it's Slim Pickens and Golden State. So to me, they're my disappointment this year.
Klay Thompson, Steve Kerr came out today and said, don't think he's going to play at all this year. So that's it. I'm not going to say, I guess this is a disappointment, because forever and a day, the San Antonio Spurs have always been in the playoffs. Well, the Robinson, Duncan, Parker, Ginobili era, they're all gone. They're all retired. They're all history. Greg Popovich, who we think is one of the best coaches out there, learned that you got to have talent to win, because he coached I don't know what that team was that they put together over the summer that came out seventh or whatever in the World Cup, whatever you want to call it. I think this is the time when the San Antonio Spurs take a step back, and they got to figure out where are we going, what are we doing. So I think for the first time in two decades, I think the San Antonio Spurs do not make the playoffs. So we'll see on that one. All right, let's see. Let's talk about the playoff teams. You know, we know that in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee is favored by many. You mentioned Philadelphia. How high up the ladder do you have the Boston Celtics this year in the East?
Yeah, I've got the Celtics, Jordy, third in the East. And look, it's not new news. The Eastern Conference is bad. So there are a lot of wins to be had that, frankly, are pretty basic. And it's going to get to my point I want to make here in a moment. But I think, you know, the Celtics are interesting. They should be better than they were last year, in that you subtract Kyrie Irving, who really, you know, look, for lack of a better term, he looks like more of a cancer than not. You know, he wants his own team. He wants to get away from LeBron. He wants a good coach, young talent. All those boxes were checked in Boston, and yet it really couldn't have gone worse. So this year, no Durant, obviously, as he's, you know, healing from the Achilles. So I think you get Kemba Walker in there, who is loved in the clubhouse. And then you'll see about guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. They're guys who have a lot to prove. I think that the Celtics, they're going to play small, but I've got them third in the East, and I've got the Bucks and the Sixers as far and away the best 1-2 in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. I don't know who wins the Southeast Division. Tell me who wins between the Hawks, the Hornets, the Heat, the Magic, and the Wizards. That's got to be the worst division in any sport in the world.
It could be for sure. And, Jordy, by default, I think the Heat do. I think they've got some moves they can make. They've got a ton of expiring contracts, which, as you know, are worth their weight in gold when teams are trying to add free agents. So I think Riley, if he senses it, remember, they got Jimmy Butler down there, who still a pretty good player. So, you know, they've got some chemistry issues they've got to figure out. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, there are wins everywhere to be had in that conference. Don't sleep on the Atlanta Hawks either. You know, they're going to play maybe the fastest pace in the league, them and the Phoenix Suns. And so we'll see. Does Trae Young take a big step forward in his sophomore year? Kevin Huerter was very, very good last year. So, you know, don't sleep on the Hawks, but they've got a ways to go as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. You mentioned the Western Conference being a bear, 44 wins or so. So, Pelicans, what's your prediction on the Pels' win total this year?
It changes a little, Jordy, given the Zion injury, but I've got them right at 43-41. I think that, did I do my math right? In that neighborhood of 43 wins, because, again, I think they're going to, everyone's going to kind of sleep on them for the first couple months, and I think I love their depth. So I've got them right at 43, which is going to put them square in the crosshairs of that eight spot. So, you know, you could argue that it's actually probably better for this club to miss the playoffs. You know, Jordy, what if Lightning strikes twice? What if they were to get, you know, a top three, top four pick next year? And not to mention all the picks they own. Because you're really starting to see David Griffin building a club for the future. But they can also win some games now. So I've got it at 43.
All right. Let's talk about, does this affect Zion and the Rookie of the Year, him being out this many games?
I think it does. Not to say he can't do it, but look, if Zion shows up and averages 19-9 with, let's say, you know, two blocks a game or three assists a game, he'll be in the running, if indeed you're right and he only misses those 19 games. I think that Ja Morant, though, Jordy, health assumed, man, you're going to talk about a guy who is going to stuff the stat sheet night in and night out up in Memphis. You know, he's already running the team. He's going to get plenty of minutes. You know, they've got a nice young nucleus, and they're going to play fast. So I think that from a stat sheet perspective, he's going to be tough to top. But, you know, Zion's not out of it. This injury just makes it a lot harder for him to win that Rookie of the Year.
All right, a lot of people in there. Giannis wins the MVP last season. Not many players have done it back-to-back years. Steve Nash did. There have been a handful that have done so. A lot of contenders for this one. Who's your MVP prediction?
Yeah, you set me up nicely, Jordy. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. Look, this kid is not yet 25 years old. If you visually see him, he's a freak of nature. As long as his arms are, his ability to get off the floor, his strength. But I don't think we're close to seeing how good he's going to be. You're talking about a guy who's still growing. He's still kind of filling out his frame, and he's still learning the finer points of this game, which is scary for the rest of the league, Jordan. I mean, that's because if he went to work on his range in the offseason. If that's true, and if you have to go guard him at 22 feet, he is literally unguardable.
Good
because
luck.
He takes a step and a half to get to the basket,
yeah.
So you can't play him there. He's a good free throw shooter, and I think he is. And he's also a made for this generation MVP, Jordy. Think how many Instagram moments Giannis is going to have coming up.
You're right. Usually goes to the best player on a really good team, and I'm with you. I think LeBron's going to have a heck of a year, but I'm going with Giannis as well. All right, All NBA first team.
Let me gently disagree with you for a second. I don't think LeBron is going to have his best year because I think he's going to lay in the cut for about 2.5 months and say, Anthony, your squad. You take the shots, you get the rebounds.
Okay.
If LeBron needs to close games, Jordy, he's going to do that. But remember, he's entering his 17th year in the league. Not to mention, those 17 years for him are like dog years because of all the postseason games he's played. So I think LeBron kind of kind of takes it easy because he knows come April 15th, he needs to be 100%. So I think he's going to hand the ball to Anthony Davis. You know, LeBron will pick his spots, but I would expect Davis to come out like a house of fire.
Hmm. Interesting. That makes perfect sense. LeBron may say, Anthony, get us to the playoffs. I'll get us to the finals. We'll see. So who goes to the finals? You mentioned you're picking Philly out of the East. Who are you picking in the West?
Yeah, and this was a really hard one, Jordy. Your head and the odds tell you the Clippers. My only concern with the Clippers is, man, they are one injury away from dropping off pretty far back. And look, Paul George has both shoulders replaced. He's got a rod in his leg. Kawhi probably maybe plays 60 games this year. So I'm a little worried about those guys' health. I think it's going to take some, maybe a trade or something else. But I've got the Lakers come out of the West just because at the end of the day, when you have two of the six best players in the world, you'll take that and you'll try to figure everything else out. The coaching, the shooting, I get it. But again, I saw one play, Jordy, in the preseason that took my breath away, and it was the high screen roll between Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And when they did it right, Jordy, I don't care. You could bring John Wooden out of the grave. There's nothing you could do with it. So when they get really good at that, everybody else look out.
I'm picking the Lakers to win the whole darn thing. I just think LeBron's got one left in him, and I think Frank Vogel's going to get him to play some defense. I think he's a really good coach for that situation, and I think the Sixers are going to get hurt by losing to J.J. Redick. I think their outside shooting is not nearly as good as it needs to be. I like the Lakers. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you on both fronts. I think Philly's going to. I saw Milwaukee a year ago in the playoffs, and it was too big for them. I'm still not sold on them, to be quite honest with you. I think the Sixers might be too much for them to handle. So we'll see. It's a marathon. We'll be talking to you throughout, but we got it on the record here, and we'll see how we fare throughout the course of this season. But, Mom, thank you for the time. Thank you for the input. Well done, my friend. And we'll Hoops with Hayes will continue this NBA season. Thank you.
See you soon, Jordy.
All right, buddy, you take care. That's Henry Hayes, Hayes on Hoops, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything you need under the sun, including that true soul food deli with the best cheeseburger ever. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Back to wrap it up next. All right, special thanks to all of our guests, Chandler Rome, Preston Ellis, Justin Ferguson, Mike Neighbors, Henry Hayes. It was on this day, October 22nd, 1984, that Kenny the Snake Stabler retired from the NFL. He led the Oakland Raiders to Super Bowl XI. He was a 1974 NFL MVP, and from the years 1982, 83, and 84, he was the quarterback of your and our New Orleans Saints. Kenny the Snake Stabler retired on this day, October 22nd, 1984. Today's your birthday. Happy birthday. You share it with 46th birthday to Ichiro Suzuki, the AL Rookie of the Year and MVP in 2001 with the Seattle Mariners. Happy 81st birthday to Christopher Lloyd from Taxi and Back to the Future. And happy 67th birthday, Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park and Independence Day. CD, well done. Talk to you tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.